Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
Welcome to your Friday edition of the OBR Film Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Jake Burns. Hopefully you have had a nice week and relaxing bye week, and you have not yelled at too many people, and we can all take a break and unwind from the juggle situation, jigsaw puzzle, I guess is the way to put it, of deciphering where the Cleveland Browns are and why they're 6-6 and where they go from here. It's been crazy. I would urge you to check out a couple pieces that I did earlier this week if you have the time. I did a piece on the Browns' blame can go around on Monday. I also did a piece on Tuesday. Sorry, actually it released on Wednesday about plays being left on the field due to execution and how that would change the stat line and move around maybe your opinion of the play caller who seems to be catching a lot of unnecessary blame in Kevin Stefanski. And also did a draft. Sorry, we did our Tuesday Twitch Chalk Talk, which is readily available for you to go back and watch. We did running game study, offensive line study, kind of hybrid in one, looking at how they were shut down by Baltimore. And then we did Baker Mayfield's film room, and then we did the defense with John Stephenson, which I feel like I've kind of let myself down because all the study of figuring out the offense, can't figure out the time I need to go back and watch, which was an awesome defensive performance against Baltimore and Lamar Jackson, which is sadly being overlooked. And that is there. And then we did a draft show on the Twitch tonight where we started to look ahead at the Browns' first five picks, very laid-back nature, no trades, just what do they need to do, who do they need to get, what kind of players can help them get better, and the positions that we target as well. So that is also available for you to consume if you should so choose. As we do with all of these Fridays, we welcome in a good friend of mine, our Friday usual guest, John Colosimo. John, how are you?
Doing good, Jake. It's been a good couple days. I've gotten sleep. My kids have allowed me to sleep more in the last 2 days than the last 2 weeks combined. So I'm a happy guy right now.
It helps. Sleep helps everything. It helps everything, man. Well, we have to talk about a couple clarification things. So, the wildly circulating thing, John, was that my piece, which did really well, we have two factions here, people who love Baker Mayfield and defend him like they're the child of their or their family member or whatever. Baker's going to let you into the pearly gates of heaven someday. And then there's another faction there is a group that takes joy in his struggle and that he's not good enough and so on and so forth. I do try to stay in the middle of that as best I can while also presenting my opinion. John, well, that my opinion is that he has plenty of skill at the NFL level to do a lot of things well. He's inconsistent. That inconsistency is right now the downfall of his NFL career. We'll see if he's able to overcome the inconsistency, but it has led me to believe that it is less than a lock that he gets a second contract in Cleveland. Doesn't mean he doesn't. Doesn't mean it's not 90%, but I think we all presumed it was a stone-cold lock, and we are a little less than that now. I think his ceiling has changed for me when he went through 2018 and he's gone through portions of his career. He had a really good stretch at the end of, the middle to end of 2021. I thought his ceiling was going to be far higher than what it is. And again, this is just my opinion. People can have a different opinion. That's fine. I don't have that. I think his ceiling is roughly somewhere at Kirk Cousins or a little better. And that is the question. What is, and that's not to say that that's going to be a different quarterback next year or in 2023. Or whatever. I don't know. Those decisions are still to be made. We'll see if he can rebound. We'll see if he can prove his worth. We'll see if the Browns think that there is a better option out there. I do not know, but that is my general stance. And I wrote that piece the other day because my thing this week, John, has been that I think the play caller, Kevin Stefanski, has been unnecessarily blamed for inadequate performance. And I wrote the piece on Baker Mayfield, which sparked a lot of debate. It wasn't, sorry, I said it was on Baker Mayfield. That's partly because that's what people have been led to believe. It was about everybody. It was about drops, poor line play, and pass game execution that is mired by some struggles from Mayfield. Plenty of struggles. It was not directed at one player. It was directed at the team's struggle, but everybody got mad that it was a Baker Mayfield hit piece. And then Kurt Warner throws out his little film room that he does. And Kurt Warner's an NFL legend and cool. But people tried to pit my opinion of that piece, like I wrote a hit piece on Baker. And Kurt Warner puts out one tweet and breaks down just a half of the game. And everybody's using that as a means to say, well, Kurt Warner believes in him. When if you follow up and look at what Kurt Warner said, he actually said he's not a great drop back passer right now by any stretch. And he also said to people in follow-up answers, he's good. He's not good. He's not bad. He's somewhere in between. Well, we know that. And you justifying a couple plays is not the means to do so. Like the bootleg play where I said, hey, Donovan Peoples-Jones dropped it. Pretty clear that was his first, you know, that was the read that they tagged for him to go to. That's fine. A couple tight ends wide open with no one within 10 yards of him, 15 yards of him. Would like to maybe think that we could find a way to get there on some plays too. And here are schemed up answers that are being missed. Whatever. People just all over the board looking for anything to be mad at. So, John, like, I lead off the pod talking the first 6 minutes, which is gross. I'm just saying, like, this is getting terrible. People are logging on every day looking for something, anything to grab a hold of and say you're wrong or you're right about Baker. I'm right, you're wrong about Baker Mayfield, whatever side you're on. And I don't see in the last five games of the year, a month and some change of football, how that is going to get better. And I think any little bit somebody can grab from someone else, they're going to use it. And they do that with my stuff too, which is, again, I look at the whole picture. I don't do little snippets. They grab everything and use it for their opinion or, hey, Jake's an idiot or whatever. It's crazy. I had an argument with some guy for like 30 minutes today on that boot play where I said it was a predetermined throw. So obviously it's his first read, but on normal boot throws, it's pretty clear that the read is if you have someone in your face, you have a flip off little dump off throw that you can take advantage of. You can't be late to the flat. You can never do that. He's going to run you run him out of bounds. But I said it was clearly a predetermined throw. Then Kurt Warner says it in a different way. And people are like, ah, see, look at, you're an idiot. Told Jake Burns that. Okay, cool, man. Just, I don't know. You're watching it. You're not arguing with, I'm not arguing with many people, but there are some who just, their Twitter handles are always like, never back down from Baker, or Baker six till I die, or always going to be six, or Baker ride till I, it's just like, what are we doing here anymore, man? You know?
Yeah. I mean, anything with this, and you know, I deal with it, whether you're running into somebody at work, whether you're, you know, talking to your family and stuff like that, everybody's looking for, you know, a single point to point their frustrations at, to blame things on. And, you know, the reality is that football is a complicated enough game that sometimes the answers and, you know, most of the time those answers are just not that simple. And, you know, sometimes there's nothing to be learned on a single game. Sometimes there's no conclusions that you can draw when you get this far into a season where so many things have not gone your way. And sometimes it's just like, you just got to wait. You just got to wait. And, you know, when it comes to Baker, I mean, what you see is what you get. And there's just not going to be, if you're expecting some kind of a different thing this year, you're just not going to see it. I mean, if you're looking for some kind of an answer with regards to Baker and his long-term future, you're not going to find it till next year, you know? So you can watch every week and, you know, you can try and build this case file for yourself, whether it's, you know, to the positive, to the negative. You can do that if you want. But in reality, you're just not going to find out anything really new. You're not going to find out whether, you know, or how much injuries played into things, you know, how much some of the things deteriorated on the offensive side, how much Odell and that situation affected things until a whole new season comes. and you're just going to have to kind of ride it. And I know the NFL is a week-to-week business. You know, everybody wants to draw new conclusions every week. You know, it's small sample size stuff. And at this point, you know, I don't know what you're going to do. And I understand what you're saying, that there's a whole lot of anger and frustration at the play calling when those kinds of criticisms actually belong somewhere else. And even if you wanted to, like, I'm not going to hear any kind of, you know, real heavy, crazy criticism of Kevin Stefanski. But if you did want to criticize him, you know, you could take an angle for that. And it would probably be on the discipline of the team in terms of penalties. It would probably be, you know, being able to regroup this team and handle the personality and those types of things. You could make legitimate criticisms about how Kevin Stefanski has handled this year if you wanted to. You know, it's one of those weird things where, and I found myself in this position on a lot of different topics. I mean, like non-football, you know, completely different topics where, you know, you might agree with somebody's conclusion or something, but they are making all the wrong points toward that. You know what I mean? And it's like, if you wanted to criticize Kevin Stefanski, there would be legitimate ways to do it. Not to the point where, you know, you should fire him or anything like that. But I could not be more solid in the fact that if play calling is what you're calling, if is what you're focused on, get your head on straight, man. That's just not where you should really be criticizing this coach. And all it takes is somebody that watches the film on a regular basis, and they would never say that. They just wouldn't say that. Yeah. So it's such a simple, objective truth to me that it's kind of bonkers to like hear that consistently be the mantra. You know, give up the play calling. It's the play calling. It's not the play calling, guys. It's not the play calling. It really isn't. You can point to a lot of other different things. You can, you know, if you chose to, you could make a cogent argument that Kevin hasn't done a good job in certain areas. I'm not going to make it for you, but it's not play calling. So, yeah, it's pretty frustrating.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, it's like when it's so results driven. You know, when Nick Chubb makes somebody miss in the backfield and then goes 75 yards, if he gets tackled in the backfield or not, your issue should be that somebody was free and untouched in the backfield. Nobody does that. You just want to talk about the results of the play. If the quarterback misses a corner route, overthrows the tight end, nobody wants to talk about that at the end of the game. We'd rather talk about, well, the play calling's broke or teams have figured them out. Well, no, that's why I had to write it this week. Nobody is giving the looking at the plays they're missing. And I was very easy on this, John. Like, I don't know if you had time to read it or not, but like just simple plays. Like if Jarvis Landry catches the sailed interception against the Lions and just gets shot and falls down, here's 20 yards that should have been made, not 30 yards on yak and all that stuff. Very right. simple. And it was 100 yards per game. And I'm looking specifically at the passing game only. When I broke down the run game with Kyle Murphy, who's infinitely smarter than I am about offensive line play, the running backs didn't do themselves any favor in this game. Three plays, they just didn't go the right direction in terms of a cut that needed to be made, but they normally make. And then you have run game success. So,
I think he earned that PFF grade. This is
he did. It was his worst game as a pro. It was Nick's worst game, and Kareem's first game back, so I totally understand it. But it's like they didn't play well there, but nobody will ever say anything. It's just the weirdest thing. And then, like me personally, what's driven me to make my Twitter account private is large part because I don't want my employer to just see what I'm tweeting all day. Whatever. Some privacy in my life is fine. But also to eliminate some of the unnecessary drivel that makes its way in where, like, I'll tweet something that's driven by years of football experience, years of being around the game, infinite studying the game. I mean, I couldn't even quantify the number of hours in my puny life that I've spent in and around football. That is just, it's silly. It would be painful to look at all the hours I've lost to this stuff.
It's like when you have a video game where they log the hours. You never want to look at that.
But then I will make an assertion about a play or a player. That bootleg play is a perfect thing. And I didn't even say in that play that Baker did the wrong thing. All I did was say, hey, man, they ran the scheme, should have been caught, but also look at the scheme and what it's producing in players open. I don't care if they call, if you're at any level, a coach will say, hey, man, and you could be on the sideline getting a play from the coach yourself as a quarterback. You could get a play relayed from a guy running off the sideline who comes into the huddle to give you the play. They'll tag routes. They'll say, hey, check out the backside post in this concept, right? Or check out this. Teams will alert it. It doesn't mean you have to. You're not being held to gunpoint to throw that. If you get out on boot and there's nobody around the tight ends, it's okay to throw that. No one's going to be mad at you for gaining 50 yards and a touchdown. So my point was, look at the scheme. And then everyone's mad at me. And it's like, hey, man, I've got a lot of experience. And this is for every point that I make. And this is not an arrogant thing whatsoever. I don't view it this way. I'll make a point, which is rooted in a ton of football philosophy, study, practice, play, whatever. Somebody will say, hey, you're wrong, who clearly doesn't do the things that I do. And then I'll say, hey, man, I'm going to support my opinion by saying, no, I'm not wrong. I believe I'm right because this is what I do. I do it. I don't go to your doctor's office and say, hey, man, I got a herniated disc. I don't care what you tell me. It's a herniated disc. I'm not going to just say, oh, you know what? You're right. Like, no, I believe what I'm saying is right. If somebody proves me wrong, I have said to them before, yeah, I was wrong. But what's going on is then I will say, hey, I actually think that I'm right. Here's why I'm right. And then they'll be like, well, why are you getting so sensitive when someone disagrees with you? What are you talking about? All I'm doing is standing up for what I'm saying. And if that offends you, that I don't want to sit here and tell you, random person, that you're right, what are we doing here? I'm not like, what are we doing? So it's just the weirdest thing. And it's like a microcosm of all of this right now. Where, you know, they act like I'm sensitive or why are you being so rude? What did I say that was rude to you? I didn't say anything. All I did was I just believed that my opinion, which is rooted in a ton of effort, work, and study in the industry to do what I'm doing and get where I am. Like, not anyone can do this. I mean, you could, but there's like, you do have to have some sort of like skill to kind of be okay at doing this stuff. And there are a lot of great people that do it, but I'm just saying, like, this didn't just happen for no reason, I guess is my point. So it gets really weird to me when people come, like, they just want to come at me and then play the victim. It's the strangest thing. And all I did was back up my opinion with what I believe. And I'm just supposed to, like, oh, you know what? You're right, Joey B266-6433. Like, what? I don't know. It's just a personal gripe that is gone. Maybe it's magnified. I don't remember it being this bad. It's probably a fan base that is crippled by the weight of expectations this year and a bunch of people who want to believe their quarterback is not the person that, you know, is the person they thought he would be. And I'm not of the belief of the same opinion they have on things. And it's turning nasty, which is a microcosm of the times, John.
I'll tell you, Jake, like that, you hit the nail on the head right there on the drive-by there with the expectations. Expectations, anywhere you place those in your life, directly and heavily affect your reactions to similar situations. You know, you could go through a certain day of your life with a certain expectation in your mind. And based on that expectation, you could have the very same experience and have drastically different reactions to it. And I think I've ran into that 1,000 times in 1,000 different ways throughout my lifetime. And that's really what this comes down to. There was expectations on this team, and for once they were warranted. They were backed up by Vegas. And, you know, you can say whatever you want about the Browns having high expectations all these other times. Oh, maybe they had this, you know, they had after, 2010, whatever, they had 6 primetime games, whatever. Vegas didn't back that team, all right? This is the most heavily Vegas-backed team that there ever has been in my lifetime, you know, watching this team. And so, you know, those expectations were legitimate. Everybody had them. And they came into this season, and we pretty much, if you had the spectrum of results that you could have expected on this team, we're pretty close to one of the worst possible outcomes that we could have coming into this season. And when you have those types of expectations, you know, then you know, it drastically affects the way people deal with the reality of what happens on Sundays when things are going wrong. And that can create all kinds of irrational responses. And like I said, like, you can just have that on just how you expect your normal day going to work to go, whatever. You can have irrational responses based on the expectations that you had for the day. And I think it's just, you know, and then you get on Twitter, and then there's an echo chamber. There's plenty of people who are going to agree with you. You got local media who are drumming up stuff for a variety of reasons, not all of them to, you know, inform the public of truth and, you know, be a reality check on things. And it can very quickly become a maelstrom of negative feelings. And they're looking for somewhere to point that cannon, Jake. And sometimes it's at you, buddy.
it's not even, you're right. First of all of that is spot on. And it's not necessarily a woe is me thing. It's just a weird phenomenon. I mean, like, yeah, seeing that it's weirding me out, and it's driven me away from social to a large extent. And I just, like, what's the point? What's the point anymore? If this is what, you know, and it is a situation where a lot of people have, they want to believe. And if you don't believe the thing that they believe in, whether that's the election or whether that's an opinion on a vaccine or whether that's an opinion on a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, they're going to go after you. And, you know, it's fine. It's just something that has driven me a little crazy of late. And I need to do better, though. Personally, I need to do better at ignoring the negative and focusing on, there's a ton of people that do a lot of positive stuff. So a lot of positive response conversation things that, you know, in your life, there's a phenomenon, right? About focusing, you could get 32 positive responses, but you get one negative one, and you focus on the wrong one, you know, out of the 33. So there's some of that too.
Speaking of the positive, you know, before we head into this week, because I don't usually get to discuss too much about the past week when it comes to the Browns, you know, can we at least talk for a couple of minutes about the positive that is JOK on this team and the difference that he made looking at this Baltimore game? You know, and dealing with Lamar and this team, because that's a guy that makes me happy to watch the Browns, and there's not too many of those on this team right now.
He's it's hard to put into words. I would like to put some words on WordPress and write about him, but he's unique, and I don't know if it's so unique because I'm not used to seeing that type of linebacker play, you know, John, where a guy is quite clearly faster than everybody else on the field. I thought he could be good. I really did. Definitely wanted them to pick him. Would have had zero issue picking him in the first round where they picked Greg Newsome. I did have some concerns about making him strictly a linebacker just because of playing inside the tackle box and what that brings. But listen, nobody gets a hand on him. I said today, and I stand by it, he plays linebacker like a running back, where
it was a good comp.
He will make people miss. He'll make offensive linemen miss him in the tackle box by doing a wide variety, dead legs, inside out moves, like a little dip the shoulder and rip move. Like, he'll do an assortment of things that keep linemen off of him. When he does have to take on a lineman, he actually handles it well, whether it's in pull blocking or whatever. And then we know how well he clicks and closes, which has even been faster than I thought it would be. Like, when he reads, deciphers, and decides I'm all in on wherever this football I think is going, it's, as somebody that does this side of it for a living like I do, it's breathtaking. Like, he is a unicorn on the football field with that stuff. And the pass coverage and instincts are good enough that, you know, that part of it's just fine too. I had to look it up after the game. I was like, I think his Pro Football Focus grades have to be really good. I think tweeted about it. And then maybe Collinsworth tweeted about it too. Like, I think he's the highest graded rookie. Now, Micah Parsons is obviously on the inside track for obvious reasons to win Rookie of the Year because of the sack numbers and the pressure numbers. And I get that. He's just a fuzz below. He's not very much below JOK in terms of overall grade, but like, what I see is I've adjusted what I even had as high expectations. I think he is an all-pro linebacker. I think he would be a Pro Bowl linebacker right now if he had not missed a few games. I genuinely think he's the perfect modern linebacker he's going to get an interception or a strip soon, because I was talking about this with John Stephenson on the Chalk Talk Tuesday. He is wonderfully in tune with, I know my guy has him wrapped up, I'm going to rip at this football. Like, two-hand get in there and rip at it. He's going to cause a fumble soon, and he's going to end up with an interception or two soon, or scoop and score. Maybe Tony Grossi will remember his name at that point because he'd make an impact play. Shout out to Tony. Met him a couple times. Nice guy to me. Some interesting takes here and there. I don't think he means evil intent, but sometimes those statements, you know, come on, man. We got to watch this thing. We're all watching it together. This guy's pretty good. He's really good. I knew he would be good in space, and he's been every bit of that. The inside the tackle box stuff, which makes him a guy like we saw Sunday night, where he can play 68 snaps in a game, never come off the field, whether it's base, nickel, or dime. That man is worth a lot of money, because that dude is a difference maker at that position, and he's got personnel group efficiency where he can play in all of them, and he can play inside and outside the tackle box, and that makes him, he's already better than I anticipated, and I had high expectations, John.
Yeah, and I was like fanboy level excited when this guy was drafted. I was posting, you know, make-believe defensive alignments with him as the Mike and dime packages, in April and those types of things. I was extremely high on him. I thought he was going to not come off the field. And I'm not sure if he hadn't, he got COVID, right? That was what held him out of a camp.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because Woods is weird with him, but, I thought the second that we drafted him that he was a guy that was going to start from day one and never come off the field. And he's still also better than I expected as a rookie. And, when you looked up his his relative athletic score, you know, as a linebacker, he was like a pretty close to a 9. like, it was just a 90 percentile athlete at that position. He was like a 96 or something as a safety, you know, so you had all those, the wars real quick on Twitter about arguing about whether he was a safety or linebacker. But, you know, he had to prove himself to be able to play inside the tackles, like you said. And I'm not sure I've seen a slippier, he's just so slippery, is what I want to say. You know, like, it's just so hard to get your hands on him. And, you know, he's so fast that these linemen have to disengage because it's an instant hold. You know, that's really what happens, is that he just moves so quick that they cannot hang on because they know that it's just going to be a penalty instantly. And I think that's what kind of contributes to his ability to kind of shed the blocks when he does have to take them on. But yeah, so just wanted to point out the one bright spot, the one thing that really kind of makes me happy watching that game and having to stay up till midnight when I've got to work and I've got crying kids and things like that. You know, that's the kind of player that makes it worth staying up for. So,
Well, Grant Delpit played well too, and it's been a roller coaster for Grant. It's been more down than up, but it's a rookie thing. You know, not all rookies come in and hit the ground running, and he is a rookie, and he's coming off a nasty injury, so that was good. They played 45 snaps for him, which means you saw a lot of Ronnie Harrison down in the box when they went dime, which is exciting to see that. I think I would say this, and I said it Tuesday too, John, in that podcast, which is this is the Browns' defense is best designed. You can clearly tell they designed it with Baltimore in mind because this was the best version of their personnel usage and performance. And it just kind of like you could see, okay, this is a team that they built for Baltimore, this personnel, and it all looks right. And I think when they play Grant more snaps, JOK more snaps, move Ronnie closer to the line of scrimmage, it's a nice group. It's a really nice group, and they'll have some games where they won't be perfect and maybe a little less New England-y than, you know, a few less of those than the contrary. But, you know, people have tried to argue about the defense left and right all season, and it's like, that's not the issue. They have been down, the Chargers game and the New England game happened. I get it. Arizona game happened. Get it. But that's three games, and they've been relatively solid outside of those three games. So, you know,
yeah, there's a part of me that is excited about the future at safety with regards to, and I know this is a massive projection, but if LeCount is a true free, mm-hmm. And you're able to play him and start him next year, what that allows them to do with, you know, if Ronnie goes, you know, with John Johnson and Grant Delpit being able to play exclusively up front with a, you know, because we really just don't have that true free between those three.
Yeah, we were talking about that on the draft show tonight, about how if you can have all those versatile players, and it's fun to say they can all do some things, different things, but that typically means you don't have guys who are really good at an isolated thing. You know what I mean? And they don't. You're spot on, John. They don't have a free that they should feel comfortable playing cover three center fielding. They've been trying to let John Johnson do that, and that's a misuse of him. But I get it if you don't feel comfortable with anyone else. Then I get it. And we were looking at some guys in the draft that could be that late round, you know, mid to late round option as a means to try to fix that, because maybe Ronnie Harrison isn't back. I think if you move him closer to the line, potentially could be back. But nonetheless, JOK, I just wish he didn't hurt that ankle week six, because we would be even higher up on where he's at right now, which is still pretty dang good. You sent me an interesting study recently. I don't know if you have it in front of you or not, about to sort of dial back to quarterback play and finish out there before we talk about the AFC North. The quarterback play is down across the league. It is not as many guys thriving as we have seen. And I don't even know if I have a reason for that. I don't know. I don't, you know, maybe it's just a weird year. I think 2017 was a similar year in that data study, but do you have an opinion on it, or is it just a weird year for quarterback play in general?
You know, there's part of me that would like to think that defenses are cracking back a little bit, finally. You know, where it's been kind of a free-for-all for the last few years of offensive explosion and those types of things. You know, we've got the Fangio/Staley type defenses that have done decently this year. But I don't know. There's also, you know, the crowds being back in it this year after a year of silent stadiums. It's pretty hard to, I think there's a lot of noise, and I just don't know what it is, but I might not be able to pinpoint why, but there's certainly a clear downgrade. You know, another thing that you could point to is, a little bit of a changing of the guard, you know, like some of the older guys are out, have retired, those types of things. So, you know, you could be looking at a short-term dip as some of the younger guys kind of get a little bit more accustomed to taking the reins, and we'll figure out who, you know, the top two, three, four guys are going to be for the next decade. It could be some of that. Whatever the case, whether or not we can define it, it is very clear that this is a down year compared to the last three previous seasons when it comes to quarterback play league-wide. And that comes to consistency and, an overall EPA per play type stuff. But there's been consistency issues, seems like, across the league, you know, where, you know, we've had guys that have, you know, played extremely well for short stretches and then had stinkers, and not a lot of sustained success at the position at all, really, you know, through, you know, whatever we are, 12 weeks here.
I have a secret. I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink. Can I use it where my bra rubs under my... yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness from my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
Hey y'all, Marseille Martin here with a little Tampax story. One time I went on vacation in the Bahamas with some friends, and of course I got my period. I didn't want anything to stop me from living my best life on my trip, so I was like, why not be brave and try Tampax? Before that, I really just thought tampons were for adults, and I definitely thought they'd be uncomfortable. Guess what, y'all? They really aren't. It might take a few tries, but once it's in right, you shouldn't feel it, which is great. For a better way to period, just add Tampax.
I think the crowd noise is a really good point. I think, too, I think more than ever before, we're seeing defenses say, go ahead and run it. Beat us running the football. I think we'll play too high. We'll put seven in coverage as often as we can. And we will say, run it. Beat us that way. And you won't consistently run it. You know, you had to think, how many times in the past 5 to 6 years have you heard people say, well, there's no correlation between play action and run game success? You know, play action success being tied to run game being good. Eventually, defenses and players that play defense are going to figure that out, too. They're going to stop biting on the run game as often. They're going to stop being so downhill at the second and third levels. I think it's a mixture of that, too. I think the wide zone stuff has sort of been not figured out, but I think teams are playing it better. If you look at the big picture of Baker's year, they've run a little less bootleg stuff, but teams are playing the bootleg way better. I feel like they've been very prepared for the levels concepts that have come off of those boot throws. I have not seen a ton of guys running wide open. I have to think you've seen the Rams dip this recently. They've come back down. They've come back down to earth. It's the same thing with San Francisco. So I don't think that the play action stuff is as successful. You got to think, if we're the idiots on Twitter who have these arguments about it, and there have been smart people that do studies on it, eventually defensive coordinators are going to philosophically change and say, hey, okay, you just want to play action us. We're not going to take your run game serious, and we're not going to give you those schemed up open throws because we're not going to take it serious. And if you do want to run it, go ahead. Now, teams will do that to the Browns where they'll take away the run game. Baltimore did that pretty much. But to me, it's like eventually defenses are going to shift their thought process and teach their guys to slow play the run game more than ever. And that, I think, could be a trend worth paying attention to in the long haul as a means to understanding why, you know, if you have less guys in coverage, you're going to have more holes in coverage. If you have more guys in coverage, you're going to have less gaps and open players to throw to. So adapt or die. Now we see what offenses and quarterbacks do to get better at it, or what answers they come up with. More screens, different sorts of manipulation concepts that can work against cover four. You know, if teams are playing more too high cover four, cover six, cover two, then maybe we'll see an uptick there. Or maybe we'll just see teams start saying, hey, no one's valuing the run anymore. Maybe we'll just run for 2,000 yards. You know, I don't know.
Ebb and flow, man. It's all an ebb and flow.
But you can only go, in my opinion, you can only go so far. Eventually, defenses are going to stop honoring the run game. They're just going to stop. And I think there has been more than ever daring teams to win this game by running it at us. We don't think you're willing to run the ball 40 times, so go ahead.
And that harkens back to a conversation that you had with I think, Jack and
Anthony.
Anthony, yeah. That's right. Yeah, earlier this year. So I think it's a little bit interesting in that. You know, I mean, I'm not ready to, you know, to 100%, but my ears are perked watching, and I think that's something we ought to be looking at and seeing whether that's playing into what we're seeing on the field this year.
Yeah, I don't even know how to study it. It would take somebody combing through all the Pro Football Focus data. It'd be someone on their back end looking at, has there been an uptick in percentage of too high across the league? Has there been some decrease in play action efficiency across the league? That's just where that's the only place that I can think of that makes logical sense, that this is what they're just not caring as much about. Because, I mean, I would be honest, this year I have seen less Browns players running open, and I don't think it's because the scheme has changed or anything, or Kevin's not as creative with play calls. I think teams are just covering it better. And I know for a fact the Rams are dealing with a two, and I, you know, I've seen the Buffalo Bills go for 6 points or 3 points in Jacksonville. Like,
yeah,
it's
the
everywhere.
The off-season studies are going to be very interesting this year, I think, in that regard.
Definitely.
Because that's when they really get to dig into, like, the full season data, and they start running through the numbers. They could do it a lot quicker than we can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With the database they have. So I'm going to be enjoying some of the off-season studies that end up coming out from guys like Kevin Cole and the PFF guys.
Yeah, because if they're aware of the quarterback struggles right now, which I think it was – was it like last year there were seven quarterbacks over a 75 QBR or something like that? And this year there's only one, Kyler Murray, who's now been out for like a month anyway.
Right. So where would he be?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. It's weird. And there's got to be something behind that weird. And since they're on the forefront of pointing it out, I would imagine they'll get to some of the rationale behind it. Let's talk the AFC North. It is Baltimore 8-3, 7-4 Cincinnati, 5-5 Pittsburgh, 6-6 Cleveland. I continue to think, and I tweeted it during that game, that I think this is just a division that's not as good as we think it is. They're all, you know, Cleveland and Pittsburgh are 500 and the Bengals are 7-4 and the Ravens are 8-3. That's cool. You could try to be like, oh, it's a tough division. I think it's a tough division, but I just think it's a battle of kind of average teams. You know, I just don't think there's really good, I don't think there's a Super Bowl contender in this division. And, it sucks because if you look at all the teams' games coming up, I'll remind everybody, Baltimore goes to Pittsburgh. They go to Cleveland, they host Green Bay, they go to Cincinnati, who whooped them the first time, they host the Rams, and then they host the Steelers. I think they have the easiest path to finishing strong, but again, I don't think Baltimore is very good. I really don't. So who knows? We'll get a be interesting to see how they play Pittsburgh this weekend, coming off that Cleveland game, because I think Baltimore's just going to like literally like be back in and win this division by default. I just kind of think it's where it's headed. Cincinnati has a tough finish. They host the Chargers, who are up and down, but they can come into Cincinnati and light it up. They host the 49ers, never easy. Go to Denver, never easy. They host Baltimore, host the Chiefs, go to Cleveland. It's not an easy finish. And then Pittsburgh, who I just hope finishes 8-9 just for the sake of where they draft, because they are a massive pretender. They host the Ravens, visit Minnesota, host the Titans, travel to Kansas City, host Cleveland at Baltimore. That's a tough finish for Pittsburgh, probably the toughest of the three. So I don't know where this goes. My hunch is that Baltimore ends up winning it by a game over Cincinnati, or Cleveland kind of hovers right there with Cincinnati. If Cleveland had, this is where you look at it, because if Cleveland had won that game the other day and sat 7-5, Baltimore 7-4, even though Cleveland's finish is not easy, you can see where Cleveland could win 1, 2, 3, 4 of their last five. And then you could say, okay, 11-6, you have a great chance, but now it's very, very narrow. It's very narrow, and I'm a little worried about it. So I don't know where you sit on the rest of the North, kind of, as we have six games worth of predictions left, but I think it's Baltimore's because of some of the ease of that finish, which is not the easiest, but it's the easiest of the group. I think they probably get to 11-6 and win the division.
Yeah, I don't have any arguments about that breakdown with the AFC North. You know, what I will say is, you know, as a Browns fan, they've needed this bye week for a long time, and this is the last chance. This is the last stop for in-season change in terms of how they play as a team. You know, I don't have a ton of hope. Like you said, the path is very narrow. It's tough sledding. But this bye week has always represented a chance for them to regroup, for them to get healthy, for them to assess. You know how the NFL season is, you know, week to week. You don't have time to truly change what you're doing to when things aren't going your way. You don't have the time to completely reassess what your team does well and what it's not week to week. You really just don't. So it's rough having this far back in the season, but if you're looking for some hope as a Browns fan, this was your last stop here. So I'm hopeful that these guys use this time wisely, you know, and I'll be looking very closely at this next game as something where, you know, could they reel off some wins? And we're going to find out real quick. We're going to find out in 2 weeks. So, well, you know, really, you know, 10 days. So we're going to find out then. But that's the little bit of hope here. You know, finally, these coaches get a chance, especially offensively is really what I'm talking about. Offensively, they get a chance to regroup, to change some things, to do some things that they haven't had all season. So, yeah, I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head on the division. It's really kind of there for whoever gets hot from here out. You know, Baltimore obviously has the inside lane because of some wildly lucky situations and wins that they had early in the season. That's really what it comes down to. The only reason that they have this inside track, but they do have it. But any team that goes, you know, any team that gets hot here and wins out, if there is a team that's going to do that, whether it's Cincinnati, I'm not saying it's going to be the Browns, you know, the team wins out, they'll win the division. Outside of Pittsburgh, we're just gonna shove them in a corner. But you know, out of Cleveland, Cincinnati, and the Ravens, any one of those teams wins out, they'll probably win the division. So, and that happens. I mean, I used to watch, you know, watch Green Bay growing up. They used to go undefeated for the you know, in December, like every single year. You know, they would just get hot. Not every single year, obviously there were some down years, but it happened quite often that they would just go on a streak to end the season and win the division and head into the playoffs. So that could happen for Cincy. You know, it could happen for anybody but Pittsburgh in this division. So we'll see.
Got to win the bye week. I think you're spot on. How you win the bye week is never something you can quantify, but you know, you look back at last year, the bye week, when they came out of it and how much better they were. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be the same this year. It's a late bye. If you watch the most recent Building the Browns and Paul DePodesta's like, this bye is so late in the year, it's almost like you don't even want it. You know, you needed the bye 3 weeks ago because that's a good middle point. You know, the fear we had about the schedule, the number one fear I had was the late bye week in like essentially playing three straight months of football with no time off. You had a little extension when you played the Thursday night game, but man, the bye week at the end of the season essentially is really hard. And you had an extra game to the schedule. It's probably not talked enough about enough. I don't know how they come out of it. I hope they're able to do the self-scouting, the self-assessing, the things, the miracles a bye week can provide. I don't know. Maybe they're too far gone. Maybe things have sailed this year. And you got a bunch of guys who are like disappointed in where they've been and just want to finish the year and start fresh next year. I don't know what that looks like. But I am excited about the opportunity, and that does give me some hope. And they can win enough games. They can win four of the final five and be 10-7. And maybe that's enough to get in. It may be. I don't know. The AFC's weird. The playoff picture's still very murky. I don't know. I'm not telling anybody to give up hope. I do think that I have never seen a team that needs a bye week more. I wish they went into it with a little bit more positivity, but you know, you should feel okay about the people the Browns have, at least the example we had last year of how they could come out of it. So we'll see. I don't know, John. We'll see. This has gone about 40 minutes longer than I thought it might. As we talked about a lot of things, but it's a weird bye. We'll talk with John again next week, where we'll probably include you, John, in a first three quarters of the season. I'm looking at position by position. So I'll have you on Friday. We'll talk about that. And then we'll also talk about how on earth the Browns figure out how to beat Baltimore, as we always do on Friday. I appreciate your time, man, as usual, friendship, all that stuff, brother. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jake. Hey, let's enjoy this week off. We all need it.
We all need it, guys. Take a break from your usual weekend grind of being upset online. And maybe the weather is decent. Maybe you can get outside. Maybe you can do something or just enjoy your time with family. I will have a draft show that will be on tomorrow's podcast feed. So check that out. And like I said, take some time away from the Browns for a little bit. If you are passionate about them, step back and have a good relaxing weekend. Watch some other teams play football. Hopefully you enjoyed this Thursday night game. I don't even know what the score is at this point. Probably doesn't even matter. It's probably ugly. as all Thursday night games are ugly. But yeah, enjoy it. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for tuning in all week. If you missed yesterday's interview with Fred Greatham, where we talked about Andrew Berry's press conference, go check that one out. It's a quick hitter, not very long at all. Thanks again to John for joining today's show. Thanks to you guys for showing the OBR support as you do on Twitch, the website, and this podcast. Appreciate you all very much. Have a great, great Friday. And as usual, go Browns.